so far, I feel like you and I have been on the same page as far as what we feel like the Titans are going to do on any given Sunday, and I think we kind of figured them out. So I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't know which way you're going as far as your prediction and the score on Sunday. My guess tells me Denver should win this game, but it's not going to happen that the Titans will find a way to get it done, because that's what happens with a team that's not even good, that's mediocre, when you go the up and down. Which way are you going?
That's exactly my rationale, Johnny, is that the Titans are 2-0 as the underdog this year, and 0-3 as the favorite. It's really kind of simply boils down to whatever you think the Titans are going to do, they have a knack for doing the opposite. On our podcast, our Tennessee and Talking Titans podcast this week, I was on with our columnist, Gentry Estes, and our sports director, Tommy Dees, and you know, I let them kind of make the argument for why they were picking the Broncos, and I said, all you're doing is strengthening my argument for why I'm picking the Titans, and that is, if the team they're playing against has a strong case, if they have some momentum behind them, that's exactly when the Titans like to come in, kind of swoop in and steal the thunder and get it done. So for whatever reason, Titans sort of have a knack for getting it done in these types of situations. They're the underdog this week in Denver against a Denver team that, you know, hasn't been good this year, but is coming off a fairly, impressive win against the Chargers. It was their only win of the season. They're 1-4. So we'll see what happens. But just the fact that the Titans are underdogs, to me, is reason enough to pick them. That to me has been the only sort of thing to grasp on as far as trying to figure out what the Titans are going to do from week to week. They're just so unpredictable that is their one sort of consistency, is being unpredictable.
I remember last year during SEC football media days, when it was held in Atlanta, I was having a one-on-one chat with Gus Malzahn, head coach of Auburn, and we were talking about teams as far as self-evaluation, you know, being able to look at yourself, self-scouting, but also evaluating not only your personnel, but also yourself as a head coach. And he stressed how important that truly is. My question, and I don't mean this to be insulting, but I wonder if Mike Vrabel understands that he's got a lot of improvement to do as a head coach. Your basic game management, adjustments, etc. Do you think he gets that?
You know, I think he's a fairly aware coach. I think he does have that going for him. I agree. I think he's got a lot of room to improve, especially. You know, last year he made a lot of aggressive calls, and, you know, I saw it as a first-year coach, not being reckless, being aggressive, being calculated in his aggression, and making some gutsy calls that, for the most part, turned out okay. And even when they didn't, you know, for the most part, I liked what he was doing. This year it's kind of just been the opposite as far as my thinking when it comes to his aggression. I've disagreed with three big calls, you know, he's made in three straight weeks, and never mind sort of the clock management toward the end of the game in week two against the Colts, where, you know, he basically threw away 30 seconds trying to draw them offside.
Absolutely.
You know, when that time really mattered toward the end. You know, I disagreed with the fourth down decision in Jacksonville on fourth and six. You know, I disagreed this past week with the decision to send Cairo Santos out for a 53-yard field goal, and honestly, it was even less disagreement with sending out a guy that had missed his previous three, and you know, Vrabel said he had confidence in Cairo Santos despite you know, him having missed his previous three field goals in the game, and it was just more situationally. I think there was less than 7 minutes left in the game. They were at about the 35-yard line, down 7 points. You know, with a field goal, you're still down 4 points. You still need the touchdown. To me, the decision, I think it was fourth and four, is to go for it there. That's a time when going for it on fourth down makes a ton of sense, the most sense. It's obviously not an ideal scenario any way you slice it, but to me, going for it on fourth down made sense. Even punting it, you know, with the weapon you have in Brent Kern and potentially pinning them back inside the far 5-yard line, would have been ideal to going out and kicking a 53-yard field goal with a guy that was 0-for-3, to move to within 4, which really doesn't help you all that much because you still need a touchdown. So I think the aggression has been too much this year. I think, maybe he's overthinking things or not thinking things through, but it's these crunch time calls that have really started to add up, and you know, I think he's got to improve in that regard big time.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that I miss most about working inside sports, these kind of situations that you just brought up, whether it's Indianapolis or Atlanta, why you didn't kick the field goal instead of going for it when you
right.
could go up by three scores, or what happened last week. When you worked inside sports, you knew the answers because you could have those conversations because of your relationship with coaches. We don't know what is entirely going on here. We don't know if this is a Mike Vrabel situation and he's getting advice to do something else and he's saying, no, I want to do this instead. Or if you have a bunch of yes folks who are not seasoned themselves and whatever he suggests, they're not willing to, you know, buck the and get off that horse and say something. So either if we are talking about yes coaches, that's a problem. If it's just a situation where Mike Vrabel is getting the right answer and he chooses a different direction, then, you know, that to me can be fixed. But if it's an entirely thing where everybody's on the same page with all these decisions that you just threw out there, that's a bigger problem.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I definitely agree with that. I think, you know, this coaching staff that Mike Vrabel has in place, you know, has been the same from year one to year two, you know, with the exception of Arthur Smith getting promoted and Matt LaFleur going to Green Bay. And they're a very close-knit group, very loyal to each other. I think you're right. I think the problem is fixable if there's dialogue and discussion that and awareness. And I think, you know, we've seen some of that after the call in Atlanta, the decision not to kick a field goal that would have put the Titans up three scores late in the fourth quarter. You know, instead they go for a fourth and six, missed that, and thankfully it doesn't come back to bite them. But it was obviously the wrong call. You know, Mike Vrabel, the next day, that day he said that, he was being aggressive. He felt like he was playing with house money, which was an explanation that I don't think made a whole lot of sense to anybody. But the following day he came back and said, you know what, if I could do it again, I think I made the wrong call. And I think that type of awareness is important, you know, and I think that boded well going forward until, again, we saw a decision, this past week, to roll with Cairo Santos. And, you know, Santos said that, you know, Mike Vrabel went up to him and kind of asked him, do you want this? And obviously a kicker that is kind of on a temporary type situation with Ryan Succop coming back in a few weeks here, he's going to say yes. So, you know, for Vrabel to go to him in that situation, you know, I don't know what he was expecting to hear. But it is interesting to see how these sort of decisions play out and how they're going to change going forward. I think the awareness factor is big. I think with Mike Vrabel, a lot of it is knowing and finding that line of when to sort of realize that a guy, you got to move on from a guy, whether it's Santos this past week or Dory Jackson, you know, another example as a punt returner. He stayed with him for a long time, probably longer than anybody else would have. He has a lot of faith in his players, had a lot of faith in Adoree. He mentioned that was part of the reason why they drafted him where they did was because, not only is he a cornerback, but he's a punt returner. But we obviously saw, how that panned out a bunch of times. And so, you know, I think for him, an important thing to learn, and he's got to get better with it, is just knowing when to move on from a situation, from a guy, and just sort of to cut your losses at that point.
Eric, it comes down to this. I go back to, you can learn a lot of life lessons from Dirty Harry, because I learned this as a kid, and it holds true today. One of my favorite lines from Clint Eastwood in the Dirty Harry role was, a man's got to know his limitations. And so that applies whether you're a head coach, a kicker, backup quarterback, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and listen, these decisions are coming in crucial moments. I think that's the big thing, is that, the reason why we're kind of dissecting all the possibilities is just because of how crucial the situation is in each instance. It didn't hurt them in Atlanta, but, you know, it obviously hurt them this past week as far as not going for it or even punting it when they instead tried for a 53-yard field goal that missed. In Jacksonville, who knows how that game turns out if instead of going for, a long fourth down, you just kick a field goal. So he's got to, adhere to heed that advice that you just said and kind of improve. And again, you know, I thought last year he was good with his calculated aggression. I think this year it's kind of gone too far and is honestly at times bordering on sort of just recklessness.
All right, there's a good news, bad news thing. The bad news, the Tennessee Titans, or this franchise, has not won in Denver since 1987. The good news is they've only played twice in Denver since 92. That was in 2007 and 2013. There's a problem, by the way, with NFL scheduling. If this is only the third time in 27 years that the Tennessee Titans / Houston, whatever the case may be, has played in Denver, but that's another story for another day. Any concerns about, I mean, to me, I think it's more mental than anything else, as long as you're substituting. Any concerns about the mile-high portion of this game in Denver?
Probably not. You know, they've got guys like Wesley Woodyard, whose brain they could pick just about sort of, conditioning and all that, and just being prepared for it. Mike Vrabel was kind of playful about all his answers, you know, in regard to that question this week. I think it's a factor. I've never been to Denver. This will be my first time. So, I know it's a thing up there. I don't know how big, an advantage it's going to be. I think if you're the Broncos, that's, a home field advantage when you have a team like the Titans who, as you just alluded to, he doesn't come there, every year or every few years. So I think it's in play how much of an impact it has on the game. I don't think it'll be that huge as far as conditioning. I think, Brett Kern mentioned the fact when I spoke with him earlier this week that the ball, will travel a little farther, and that's something for him to take into account as well as new kicker Cody Parkey, who I believe has kicked there once before, and I think that was in a preseason game. So there's adjustments for those guys for sure, just as there is every week when it comes to, weather and stadium and wind and all these things. So, I think at the end of the day,